Hello, everyone, and welcome to Total Football Debate, episode 50, the big 5-0 for us today. And there are three of us running the show. And what a show it's going to be. It's going to be such a professional show.
Can we just take a moment that there's three out of four here tonight? And unlike Arsenal last night, it's the Arsenal fan that's decided to turn up tonight.
In fairness, I'm here on my own free will.
We will certainly get to that after what was a very important week for a few clubs. It was Jason and Cossy last week, and as Jason's already alluded to, there is no Cossy this week. But this will be Cookie's last Premier League show. How weird is that? Don't feel like that
long
ago.
It was. I know Arsenal have been bad, but they've not been relegated from the Premier League.
So let's try and do this in some kind of chronological order, shall we? Just to keep us on track, we will be brushing past quite a lot of games because some of them are irrelevant, and we have to give ourselves time to discuss the big ones. Unfortunately, Cookie, you are one big piece of the puzzle when it comes to big games on this episode.
I know.
So we started it where it was Aston Villa Liverpool, and Steven Gerrard had his testimonial. He was just manager of Aston Villa. Liverpool got a good win in that game, not lingering on it for too long. But was you surprised that Liverpool were Liverpool, I've got to be honest, when you look at it, a bit of nerves creeping in, I think, isn't it?
I'm not sure if it's nerves or whether just Klopp's negativity in the press is rubbing in off the players in terms of this victim mentality of we're playing too many games, we're fatigued, we're this, we're that. It's almost like he's copping them for excuses going into any game. So I'm not sure that they're nervous, but I feel like if you've got your manager coming out publicly every time moaning about the schedule, you're giving your players an excuse to be off the boil a little bit. And I think ultimately that's probably had a bit of an impact in terms of, I mean, to be fair, they are juggling on four fronts and they obviously want to try and win it all. I still think City are going to win the league. I don't think there's any way City fluff that up on the last game of the season now.
I mean, but when you look at it, Liverpool, you can't even really say they kept, you know, all eyes on the FA Cup or whatnot, because I wouldn't even turn around and say that FA Cup performance. I mean, that's two cup finals now, no goals scored. Mm-hmm. Against a Chelsea side who, let's be honest, we've all been quite open, are struggling at the moment. I would have expected Liverpool to have run away. I mean, they've got the two cups in the bag at the end of the day. They've done what they needed to do, but not in the most convincing of fashions. But yeah, I mean, do you think it's just one game too many, or do you think this is a, as you say, Jace, more a psychological factor? I mean, Cookie, what do you make of Liverpool?
I just think they're just getting the job done at the minute. I think, I mean, that Saturday, from what I gather, I mean, I watched the first half. I turned it off because it was that boring and dull. I knew it was going to be 0-0 extra time and the rest of it. But I just feel for me, when I watch Liverpool now, they're always in second gear. And I always think that they can cruise through these games. And then, bam, it just takes one moment and they're just good enough to get the job done.
Is there
fatigue? I mean, it's got to be. Fatigue may play a factor, but then with that squad and how he's rotated it, I don't know. He might have the Champions League in mind. I don't know.
That's what I was about to say. I think partially for him, he's probably got one
it's
eye
got
on
to be.
Champions League, knowing that the Premier League, barring a worldie record, City on the last game of the season going against City, I think he's probably thinking in the back of his mind, the league is, we can probably get the result we need by rotating the squad tonight against Southampton. But let's face it, you know, they've won the FA Cup, tick. They've won the League Cup, tick. The Premier League isn't in their hands. So they're at the mercy of Man City. So if you're Klopp, and you're thinking, right, I've got a game tonight against Southampton, then I've got a game last game of the season on Sunday. Are you going to sit there and go all guns blazing for those two games? Or Are you going to half-arse is probably the wrong word, but half-arse it against Southampton, try and grind the result like they did against Everton, to be fair. They weren't great against Everton when they played Everton even. Excuse me.
I think it's hard to say half-arse with this Liverpool squad, though, because the way you look at it, they're always going to be a threat in every game possible. Even that front lineup of what Minamino, who's barely played, but yet he's still got a goal in him. Jota and Firmino. I mean, they still carry a threat in every game they play.
So, yeah, not lingering on that. Aston Villa, one of the pointless sides. That we have to make cuts at some point, and they are one of them. We've already spoken about them and their transfer business and how they were probably the worst recruited team. And we'll talk about them a bit more once the season's over, no doubt.
One thing to note that we have mentioned about them numerous times is Coutinho the right signing for the money involved? And they have gone on to confirm this week that he indeed is signing permanently, which is interesting given their direction in the summer. Because you would think, if he's a permanent, next season in mind, you don't want to be finishing, what are they, 14th now? So they potentially could still finish as far down as 15th, just off Everton, who are in the relegation places. So really, as a Villa fan, you'd like to think that sets the tone for the transfer business in the summer, based on what Gerrard has said.
So the following day, we'll get them out of the way. Wolves 1, Man City 5. Man City doing what they needed to do. I mean,
De Bruyne.
That was the game that De Bruyne absolutely rinsed them, wasn't it? It's ridiculous. I mean, if there was a time that he could show up and say, don't forget about me after having a bit of an injury-ravaged season, it was that, and his ridiculous performance. So, you know, he's certainly put himself in with a shout. It's been a while since I've seen an individual performance like that. Wolves 2 weeks on the trot, conceding the most goals they've ever conceded in the season, which is a sign of maybe what's to come next season if he doesn't get his squad. And then you've got Leicester v Norwich, 3-0 Leicester. Of course, James Maddison would score one of the goals.
Round of applause from Carrow Road probably as well.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Norwich is get again, their season's up. They have got one last vital piece of the puzzle to put down for Arsenal, for sure. We'll get on to that as to whether Cookie sees any chance of that coming to fruition. Now, the other two games in that game week were Leeds-Chelsea and Watford-Everton. Now, two teams we have spoken about a lot, Leeds and Everton. Leeds getting spanked by Chelsea, obviously, with, again, another ill-disciplined display, which is becoming a bit alarming, and a massive opportunity missed for Everton. I mean, Everton could have had this wrapped with a win there. Across the two games, Leeds, Chelsea, Watford, Everton, what are your thoughts?
Called it with Leeds. I said they'd get a red card and behave like headless chickens. They did, and they got their arses handed to them, didn't they? So no real surprises there, to be honest. Everton Watford is what it is in the end, isn't it? It's
story of the way away from home, really, for Everton. They haven't won away since August. I mean, if there was ever a time to pick up a result away from home, especially going into the weekend, you'd think that's got to be the one, and they just didn't show up.
No, I mean,
much unlike their fans, obviously, which obviously you'll go into later.
Yeah, but even they only showed up for 10 seconds.
Everton are one of those teams, aren't they? They're Lampard, a bit like Arteta, which we'll come on to later. Lampard and Everton are in the position they're in because he comes across as a bit of a streaky manager. So he'll win one or two, lose three or four, and then there we go again. So Everton are just lucky that prior to that Watford game, and namely down to that Chelsea game, let's be honest, at Goodison Park, because I think if they'd lost that, they'd have been a bit of a free-for-all. But that's typical Everton for you. Look, they did it when they beat Newcastle a few weeks ago. They looked like world beaters, and then they were just absolute dross for two or three games, and then here we go again. So Everton is just one of those teams. One minute they look good, most of the time they look awful, and that Watford game, some, well, that's why they are where they are. They're not there by fluke. That is why they are down there, because, you know, one game they look good, but for three or four games they'll be rubbish and then back to square one again. So,
and then came Thursday.
What happened on Thursday?
To be honest, I'm not too sure.
Hang on. In all seriousness, I've just clicked as to what you said, and I'd like to take a moment in this show because it's very, very important. We don't like it when bad things happen, but
you always like to take a moment, don't you?
No, well, here's the thing. We always flag up the serious situations and, you know, appeals, and we always flag up when things like racism and fan abuse comes up and people acting stupid and, you know, now I really must, we have to use this platform in a positive light, right? And can we please put our thoughts and prayers, because it carried on yesterday as well, out to Gabriel and Ben White, because we had to put an appeal out after the game at White Hart Lane. They went missing at White Hart Lane for 90 minutes, and they never came back. And last night,
hold on,
they were meant
to turn up. Play.
They were meant to turn up at St James's Park, and neither of them turned up. So, just thoughts and prayers with Gabrielle and Ben White's family. And if anyone has any information as to where they are, please, please use the power of social media. Now, as I understand it,
please send that to Jason Bastard's address with a middle finger to him, honestly.
If Harry Kane and Son can please empty their pockets and try and find them, if the pockets are big enough.
I'm more concerned about the mental well-being of Rob Holden, to be honest. Look, we need to discuss. Cookie, me and you haven't had a proper chat about this yet.
No, you didn't get to see
the game, did you? Which was, you know, a blessing for you, to be fair.
No, the thing was I had to work with a Spurs fan very closely. He was giving me regular updates. I don't know why.
I bet. And then you did watch the game back, or you caught the highlights and whatnot.
Yes, I did watch all of it back.
Without going into detail off the back of the game last night, because we'll do this in two segments, because two segments, you know, allows you to get over it and then bring it back.
We'll get over one and then we'll get the other.
Exactly,
out.
Yeah. We're not going to put it all into one bowl. Honestly, no jokes. How did you feel as an Arsenal fan after that game, knowing that you had to... I mean, let's be honest. I've spoken to an Arsenal fan at work quite often since that game. And he agreed that even if they could have lost that game and still been okay, but it was the manner in which they lost and the manner as to how they capitulated on the pitch that has then led them down this path, because they just needed to put in a respectable performance and I think they would have cruised through potentially the next two games. So how did you feel coming off the back of that game, seeing that attitude from your players in a game that had so much riding on it?
I mean, in fairness, we started that game quite well in the first 5 to 10 minutes. And that first foul on Son by Holden said everything you needed to know what was going to happen throughout the rest of that game.
That smirk did it for me.
That smirk did it straight away. And he knew that he could get the best of him straight away. They were saying, give me the ball and I will skin this guy. And time and time again, it happened. And then obviously, I mean, the red card, I mean, people arguing over there, there's not a red card, blah, blah, blah. That is closer to being a straight red card than it is a second yellow card. And the fact that he was on a yellow card because he'd been battling with Son meant that it was always going to end up that way. It was only going to end up one way. The thing is, he didn't even need to make the foul. The ball was overhit, which was really, that really grinds me. playing as a defender before as a kid, you got to put trust in your goalkeeper. There's got to be some sort of communication between the goalkeeper and the back line, and even that far out. That ball's been over here. Ramsdale's in perfect position. I mean, just after that, it was just, they turned into headless chickens after that. It was like, well, the game's gone now. You're 1-0 down to 10 men. They just gave up in the end.
How bad does that COVID postponement look now?
A million times worse.
Agreed. I mean,
purely because it was over one COVID. And even I said it at the time, why are you postponing it over one COVID case?
Well, here's the thing. And
especially when was Son injured in that game as well?
Yeah, he would have missed injured. The game.
I'm not going to be Messiah here because Gary Neville has since mentioned it. But if that game went ahead when it was originally supposed to, Arsenal would have had it out of their system by now. And my opinion isn't any different. As I say, Gary Neville's already said this, so I'm not kind of copying him. But the point is, that game took place when it did. If Tottenham had won, Tottenham might have had a bounce. But at that time, Arsenal were streets ahead. So a couple of games out of it, Arsenal might have had a little dip. But now, being so close to the end of the season, I mean, let's not kid ourselves, right? Take the postponement out of it. And this is a wider, we'll come on to the Newcastle game, I'm sure, in a bit. But Arsenal's season, and it shows that even in the title race, the key moments matter in the season. And it doesn't have to be major, it can be margins. But Arsenal haven't lost fourth spot because of last night's result. And they have, technically, but they haven't lost because of the one-off game last night. They haven't lost because of even necessarily that Tottenham game on Thursday of last week. The reason why they've lost is because at key points, at one point, I was lauding Arteta saying, yeah, he's actually done a good job and got the best out of those players and he should be player of the season, manager of the season, rather. And at that point, Arsenal were on a run of fire and they seemed they were unbeatable and unstoppable. Then, and Cookie's going to say, oh, you always relate it back to Palace. But
no, I know where you're going because you're spot on with what you're about to go on with here. I will actually go and agree with you, but go on.
But that game was the trigger that finished Arsenal for top four. And I said it at the time, you could see on the pitch after at Selhurst Park, the players drop. No one saw, I mean, I was quite ballsy and said, oh yeah, Palace, I feel like they'll probably win that one because Arsenal haven't lost for ages and it's the type of game that Palace will probably go and win. No one predicted Palace winning. No one could predict that Palace would go out and batter them, given that the form Arsenal were in. Let's not kid ourselves. Arsenal were on fire at the time. But that, for me, was the turning point. When it matters, Tottenham, all they needed to do was draw that game. You didn't even have to lose. You go into that game and you get a point, fine. You come away fairly untarnished with that. Okay, the gap's not...
I think Spurs would have been deflated.
I do think that as well as Arteta's done to get the best out of that team, because I don't think that team has any right even to finish fifth in the league. I think it's a bang average team, to be honest. And I said this, and I think I mentioned it after the game, the Derby game. Arteta was so ballsy and so almost passive aggressive in his kind of pre-match build-up. We're going to win. I want top four wrapped up tonight. I want, you know, da, da, da. I'm telling you now, if that's any of Conte, Mourinho, Pep, any one of those big team serial winner managers, yeah, of course they'll want to win the game. But what they would have done is controlled the situation and said, right, ideally we win and we win by doing this. However, the most important thing in this game, because it's, as Cookie has said about 1,000 times on loop, it's in our hands. Whatever you do, do not come off that pitch and lose that game. We at least, at minimum, take a draw. they played the occasion. They played the biggie big bollocks. They played the get the foot in, do this, do that. And Tottenham could see it. And Tottenham allowed them to do it because, and Son allowed Holding to do it because Son knew if he gets an early yellow card, they'll get him sent off by half time, no problem at all. He knew it and you could see it. And that's the difference. Arsenal played the occasion and not the game. And Conte and Spurs allowed Arsenal to do that. Spurs could have rose above it and retaliated. Like Son could have retaliated to Holding's antics, but he didn't. He let his feet do the talking because he knew Holding was not mentally in the right place.
I think Rob Holding's got a lot to answer for going forward with Arsenal because he gave that Spurs crowd something to get up and out for. Like the moment he started smirking and giving a little kick, he just riled the whole fan base up. And from that moment, it was game over. And I mean, you hear all the commentators and the pundits say they've never heard an atmosphere like it. They just had to frustrate Spurs. That fan base was one half away from starting to turn a little bit toxic at the desperation of we need something out of this game. And I think even if Arsenal had lost 2-1 or whatever, they would have gone into that Newcastle game thinking, yeah, we lost, but we played well, et cetera, et cetera. The capitulation, similar to the Crystal Palace game, is what has led to them having that self-doubt for future fixtures. And as we'll get onto, it's led to their downfall because the performance last night blew my mind. I could not believe that was a club that had something to play for and the other ones didn't. But we will discuss that for sure. I mean, Spurs in their last 10 games finished on 23 points, Arsenal 15. Spurs were only a point off Man City and 3 points off Liverpool in the last 10 games, which, you know, I do think in the wider context, Tottenham getting Champions League football could be a chance at redemption for Spurs because I do feel like Conte has just shown everyone that, you know, in the time that he's been there since November, the turnaround is just ridiculous. And the level that he's got specific players playing at when they couldn't kick a barn door before he joined, your Ben Davies, your Eric Dyers, who have looked absolutely so. I'm shocked myself at how they've become.
Can we just mention, because I actually thought, I've never rated him at club level because I've never really seen it, but for England, he was one of those like Harry Maguire, he'd always turn up for England. Eric Dyer's transformation has been unbelievable. I tell you now, the worry for Arsenal going forward, and again, it's so obvious because Neville said it even yesterday, but Tottenham finishing fourth and having Champions League football going into next year with Conte at the helm, with Bentancur and Kulusevski wrapped up already, I think Harry Kane's sitting there now. And look, let's face it, Man City have got Haaland now. Real Madrid are about to get probably Mbappe. Harry Kane has nowhere to go. And Cookie may slightly say they're Newcastle, but Newcastle aren't on that level. They don't have the FFP capability, I believe, to sign what would be required. Harry Kane is going nowhere right now. He is going nowhere.
I think Spurs' worry is more nailing down Conte.
No, I don't think so. Not now. I don't think so. What I was about to say, and I haven't gotten my point yet, I've longed it out a bit, is Spurs under Conte in the Champions League next season, that's dangerous because I do think now they'll have Conte for at least the next, depending on how the summer goes, but I think he'll be there at least for the next two seasons at Spurs now. And
they've got to nail him down though.
Let's not kid ourselves, right? Conte's objective going into Spurs was one, trying to get the basket case club, which they were at the time, into Europe. So not just Champions League, but at bare minimum, Europa League. Spurs were nowhere near it when Conte came in. And even when he first came in, they were so hit and miss. at one point, it didn't even look like they'd finished sixth, right? So his priority number one was trying to get them as close to top four as possible. Tick. He's done the unthinkable. Leafy's probably sitting there, and at best, I think at one point you're thinking Spurs will get Europa League and fifth. Then there's no way they'll push for fourth. The fact that he sat there and got fourth and got them back into a Champions League spot is ridiculous.
This man doesn't stay if he's not given the guarantees. I think everyone can see that. So there's a big, big chance. And Spurs, I think, for Levy's perspective, I think Levy is sitting there patting down his forehead at the moment because they were very, very close from going from the highs of 2019 to becoming borderline irrelevant again for another 10 years when they got Nuno. And I think the fact that they got Conte in and got Champions League is a massive sigh of relief for Levy, to the point where I think he's like, I can't risk that again. Look, we've still got to speak about Spurs and Arsenal in their next game, so we'll move this on. We'll give Spurs and Arsenal a bit of a break, because I do want to talk to Cookie about what needs to happen with Arsenal going forward, because we've just spoken about Spurs going forward and the attractions there. So I'm interested to know from here what this now means for Arsenal and what on earth they have to do, because there's a lot of ifs and buts that come with this squad and this manager, where it's a project, but are players willing to give this project time? And has he got time? That's the other issue. Tonight's game's just blown up for full time, and Liverpool have beaten Southampton. So it does go down to the last two games. Well, the last game of the season to decide the title. Liverpool 1 point behind Man City. They got the job done, I must say, with a squad that did not look, you know, I mean, what a win, impressive. Really.
That's impressive.
To come out and win that game with that starting 11, I mean, that is a gamble that has paid off massively for Klopp. So fair play to him. Let's get a couple of these games out the way then. So we don't need to say much about Liverpool. Southampton goes to the last game of the season. What a season in the end it's come down to, especially with some of the games that are on the line. We'll leave Burnley and Arsenal, Tottenham and Arsenal till later. Let's quickly recap. I mean, what did everyone make of the West Ham Man City result? I did not see that coming, I'm not going to lie.
Crazy. But I think, you know what?
Tale of two halves for Man City, wasn't it?
Well, it was perfectly poised for West Ham, as in their last home game, the last home game for Mark Noble. And I think we just went out there with a, we've got nothing to lose, but let's give him one last big send-off and memorable game. And boy, oh boy.
Tell you what, though, Jared Bowen, he's just ridiculous. If he's up, that he's got to be up there with one of the players of, it's definitely the second half of the season, because he's come on leaps and bounds. I mean, 100%. His ability to finish and take on players, even the quality of Man City, and he just up front and was like, right, I'm taking you on. It was something else. And City, I mean, that's the worst I've seen Man City play in a while.
Yeah, maybe. I think they were poor. I think they were poor. But you know what? Again, as poor as they were, let's not turn this into a they were poor. That's why West Ham got what they did. Generally, I just think the occasion of last home game and Mark Noble's last game, I generally think they went out there with a two shits not given. Obviously, West Ham's incentive was to finish above United, I think. Or, you
up
know,
their level.
And they up their level. And I think they just enjoyed the occasion and they enjoyed that last home game feeling. And that was always the danger. Because the one thing with Man City is, it can go one or two ways, right? You can go at them, and if you take your chances, then you'll get in behind and you'll score in that. I feel like even the teams in the bottom half of the table, like the, you know, kind of bottom 10, they're confident they can get a result against City. Because if you go at them, their defence is, for whatever
reason, their defence is average.
Their defence is average.
The goalkeeper is not very good stopping shots. But I mean, he could play midfield with his passing ability, but I've said this before about it, is goalkeeping and shot saving, he's not the best.
No, and when you've got him there inconsistent in the back four, if you go at him, you've got a chance.
Right. Watford 1, Leicester 5. Nice little sign-off for Watford. Fucking hell. Says a lot. Wolves 1, Norwich 1.
Says sums Wolves up.
It does. Poor end to the season for Wolves, wasn't it?
Well, considering how close they
were. Stopped, didn't they? They've just hit the beach, didn't they?
Well, I don't think you could say they hit the beach. Their aim was to finish top six at one point. They were right on the tails of Europe and they've completely... But
I mean, you remember us saying how big that gap was between Wolves and ninth, and it's only like 4 points now or something like that, 3 points, if that. At one point, I'm sure it was nearly like 10 points because we said, oh, Wolves are bottom of that pack. And then there's a gap and then it starts at ninth. Well, now Leicester might finish above them. And who would have thought that 10 games ago? We've got a couple of draws in there then. We have Leeds, Brighton, and probably a more irrelevant game of Aston Villa Palace. So where would you like to start? Aston Villa Palace? Well, not that we're going to say too much about that one. Or Leeds, Brighton?
Well, we can wrap them both up pretty quickly, to be fair. But the Leeds one's more significant. So I'll start off with the Palace one. Palace actually played really well, to be fair to them. I didn't realise how well they played until I saw the highlights and saw the kind of summary of the game. As for Leeds-Brighton, well, I'm obviously personally happy.
Big last-minute goal.
Because Palace still have a game in hand on Brighton, and that means that the meal on you boys, luckily for you guys, I didn't have to put the order in for the mayo chickens on the Pound Saver menu just yet. So that saves that for another week. But look, that Leeds goal was absolutely massive. And I mean, well, they still look like a bag of shit and Burnley still have a game in hand on them. But if you're Leeds now with one game left, my God, if Leeds win their game and if Everton draw on Thursday, I think Arsenal beat them on the last game of the season. But then Leeds, if they go and beat Brentford, which I think they will, that pulls Everton into it on 37 points. And I'll back Burnley to win one of their two games and they've got a better goal difference than Everton. So it's all on Palace to do the unthinkable, because if Palace win, I think Everton are gone.
We know where we stand with Everton, how important that final, the final two games are. Brentford, however, I mean, how big of an achievement is it if Brentford do finish in the top half of the table in that first season?
I mean, I'm going to say now, I hate all three of you, and yes, including Cossy as well, because ever since that poor run of form they got on and Cossy was like, yeah, that shit, they'll get dragged into it, I jumped the bandwagon. I had them finishing 11th or 12th about 10 games ago.
Yes, you did.
And I put them to 15th. Because Arsenal was like, you influenced me and said to me, oh, that weren't happening. I should have stuck my guns.
Yes, you should have.
We'll see if Brentford suffer from second season syndrome. There's a good chance that could happen. I mean, Eriksen, we're not expecting will stay there, and he certainly has transformed that club. But massive achievement. And I wasn't kidding that I think, you know, Thomas Frank deserves a bit of recognition. 2 points behind Leicester. I think that shows the quality of the league this season, but it's there for the taking.
47 goals they've scored as well this season, which is, I'm very surprised how many goals they've scored.
It's a great season for them to try and establish themselves in the Premier League, because some teams just don't seem to want to be there. So we got them ones out of the way. Let's move on. So, Mr. Cook, what happened?
Not a lot.
Because Spurs obviously beat Burnley just... I mean, that nearly didn't go to plan, Spurs and Burnley, but they dug in and just about got it. But you've got to be looking at that performance last night, just when I thought it couldn't get any worse than the North London Derby. And I actually do think that one has gone down a lot worse than the North London Derby.
I saw the stats, right, and somehow
I saw the game, mate. Shots. I saw the game.
They counted 11 shots. How did they count 11 shots when we got about three off?
I have not seen. I mean, I thought Newcastle were playing for top four. I'm not going to lie. I mean, it could have been five.
No one got within 5 yards of any Newcastle player when they had the ball. Like, no one was closing down. No one was running around trying to close down. No one was putting tackles in. They were just, they couldn't string two. When they got the ball, they couldn't string two passes together. I mean, it was so unbelievably poor.
To lose the Spurs game the way they did, and then to be given a second bite of the cherry, because again, all Arsenal had to do, it was in their hands. All they had to do was win, and I make it sound easier said than done, but
yeah,
they had to go in that game and stamp their authority and show a bit of oomph. Now, they got away with it in the first half because Arsenal weren't great and they got to half time. But to get in the second half, after putting in that performance in the first half and to come out worse than what you were in the first half and not get within kind of 4 or 5 yards of any...
I think it took its toll. I'm not making excuses, but there were injuries carrying in. I mean, Tomiyasu went off in the first half because Saint-Maximin literally ran him into the ground.
But the problem is, right, I get Gabriel and Ben White weren't fully fit potentially and Tomiyasu come off. But the concern for me is he didn't create anything. And the midfield went missing. Shaka comes out with the big bollocks about players going missing. Well, the midfield was hardly there. Like, that's where the game was lost. The amount of times that Newcastle got to the first, the second balls and picked everything up. The midfield was just...
Yeah.
It was neither here nor there. And it was just a pathetic... Putting it bluntly, it was a pathetic performance. And then what did the front three do all game? Saka, for me... I mean, I'm not being funny. I mean... If Saka's got a ceiling, I'll tell you now, he's nowhere near it, because all I've seen of Saka the last few games is how weak his piss he is on the ball. I'm not being funny, but he just...
That's one thing I kept hearing, like, oh, you know, if Saka's fit for you. I'm not going to lie, as good, as talented as I think he is, and I think this is going back, and this is where I'm going to bring you in, Cookie, to sort of guide us as to where you think this team is at and where it's going, because yes, I think Saka's a talent and whatnot, but people were saying, like, oh, Saka's going to be back for the game against Spurs. And I'm sitting there, honestly, and thinking, I really don't fear the guy. I don't think he's got anything that I need to sit there and worry about. Like, you know, I don't think he's a big, you know, big game player where there used to be, like, players for Arsenal and Chelsea that when they played, I used to get a bit nervous, you know, or Ronaldo when he played and stuff like that, when they'd be running at Spurs and I'd be thinking, oh God, don't let him get in the ball. I never once sat there and thought, where's Saka? Like, I've got to keep an eye on him because I'm concerned he's going to, you know, get hold of it and cause us a problem. I don't fear him. And I think he's a long way off being feared as well, to be completely honest with you. So, I mean, what is the situation now, Cook? Because
I think in relation to Saka, is the last 3 years, he has carried this football club on his head and shoulders since he was what broke into the team. He hasn't got that fear factor yet. I think he's got bags of potential. He's completely, the sky's the limit for him. In terms of the whole situation with us, I mean, face value, would I take fifth in where we are now in terms of what happened in the summer? I'll take fifth. But in terms of the fact that we were probably fourth place since December and before Christmas, and to lose it the way we have, of course it's disappointing. For me, next year, they need to get themselves dusted down and they need a big summer and try and recruit a squad, because they had the chance. This was another difference between you guys and us in January. You went out and got players that were game changers or were going to be game changers and walked straight in the team. You know, even with, I know you joke about Harry Winks and that, but you still had that option of bringing him on. Whereas you look at our first next team is not bad when they're fit. Partey, Tierney, but it's now come to a point where you just can't rely on your first team being fit. You need that squad that has that bit of quality and a bit of, bit of fight, I wouldn't say necessarily experience, a bit of effort.
But what I want to know is it risky putting all your eggs in one basket and believing these group of kids are going to become great players? Or is there a chance that Arteta may not even be able to see out that project, which is, I think likely? And does he need to? Because I do think Arsenal missed this. Do Arsenal need to turn to a bit of experience in the summer to come in and navigate these youngsters? Because not my concern, but if I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be sitting there going, Saka, Smith Rowe, Odegaard, Martinelli. Yes, they've got the potential, but also my concern is Arsenal of late, and when I say of late, I mean in the past 10 years or so, you've seen it happen with Walcott, you've seen it happen with Oxlade-Chamberlain. Is there a risk that these players could, if they don't have the right players around them, fizzle out and become nobodies? I think your squad needs three or four, not youngsters anymore. I don't think you can be calling on more youngsters because I don't think the project's going to be around long enough to see the youngsters.
We need about four or five that maybe not be starters, maybe, but in case of you've got that experience or a bit of quality that you can call upon.
I think you need three experienced top quality. And when I say top quality, I mean European experience that have played at a good level, your Sevillas, your Inter Milans, them kind of... Similar, funny enough, to what Tottenham done. They apparently bought the Juventus rejects. Well, I'm sorry, but if that's the Juventus rejects, then, you know, I think Juventus need to take a good look.
That's not a bad thing going to someone like that, though.
I think that's what you need. I'm trying to think of players that would happily go to Arsenal, potentially. I'm thinking of like your players like your Brozovic, them sort of players into that are generals and have that experience where they can turn round to your players that think they're experienced players at the moment, like your Ben Whites, and go, what? Like Romero's walked in, Bentancur's walked in, and they've gone, other than Harry Kane and Son, to most of them players, what have you done?
Can I just say?
And all of a sudden, they've elevated themselves as key influential figures. I think Arsenal need influential figures, and you need a striker that will have your wingers looking at that striker and going, he's just the nuts.
I fully agree with you, by the way. I've always said, in terms of the spine of the team, so centre-back, midfield and up top, they've missed experience. But I also think Edu and the recruitment team at Arsenal have a lot to answer for, because look at the team from last night. Elneny. Now, he's had a handful of good games the last few weeks, and Arsenal got generous and, as I understand it, offered him a new contract just off the back of a handful of decent performances. Is that right, Cook? He signed a new contract recently? Or is it about?
He has, yeah.
Why? He's been shocking all year. You look at the bench. Mm. Leno, who I think is a decent keeper, he's just been unfortunate because he was decent at Leverkusen before he joined Arsenal. But the subs bench, Cedric, Swanson, Callum Hand, Lokonga, Patino, Martinelli, Pepe and Lacazette. Now, not being funny, you can tell me all you want that you've got injuries and the depth just ain't there. But let me put it to you like this. Your injury list is currently this. Tomiyasu, who would have come in for Tavares probably. Well, actually, he started yesterday, so he was already...
Yeah, he's done. He come off injured, yeah.
So he's their mate. He's their right-back, but he is a bit of a... He's almost not an out-and-out right-back. He's a right-back slash centre-back. It's one of those odd ones.
So this takes my point even further. So Tomiyasu, as of yesterday, wasn't an injury concern. He started, right? So as of 8 o'clock yesterday, the three injuries or suspensions Arsenal had out were Thomas Partey, who would have obviously came in for Elneny, Kieran Tierney, who would have come in for Tavares, and the other one was Rob Holding. Now, with Ben White and Gabriel fit, and obviously they weren't fully fit, but Rob Holding isn't first choice anymore. White and Gabriel are. So really and truly, they only had Partey and Tierney missing yesterday, as in two. So everyone talks about injuries and suspensions. They had two key players out yesterday, pre-kickoff. So the injuries and the suspension thing is a bit of a mask, if I'm honest, and it comes across as a pitiful excuse. But the point is this. If those two started yesterday, that benches Elneny and that benches Tavares, which probably then takes Culloden, Hunter and Swanson off the bench. But Lokonga, they spent 18 million quid on in the summer. He can't get a look in. Then you've got Patino, Martinelli, Pepe and Lacazette. Well, I'm being funny. Going into next season, Patino, from what I hear on the outside in, is meant to be pretty good, but he's a youngster. Lacazette's not going to be there next year, so he's irrelevant. Pepe, what a flop he's been, and he was absolutely shocking when he came on, by the way, yesterday. And as you say, Martinelli's still a work in progress, and Cedric, I mean, the fact that he's a backup right back at this level at this point is shocking. So the recruitment team have a lot to answer for at Arsenal, in my opinion, because that squad, you talk about injuries and suspension, they're only missing two key players as of kickoff yesterday, you know, so they're not ripped apart by injuries. But Scott's right. You need three players. The spine of that team needs three players that are 27, 28, that are serial winners, that know how to deal with the big game occasions.
I mean, there's a prime example before we wrap this up of like one player that I would have turned around. And I know it depends on the player. And this is the problem that I think Arsenal got. But I even thought this was Spurs, to be fair. So that just goes to show like what I think this player could do. But the moment I heard, if I was Arsenal or Spurs, that Gundogan was available, I would have been all over that, just from an experience point of view.
Yeah.
But I think Arsenal's big position is the centre midfield. Get two of them in, and it has been, yeah. Get two of them in, and I think they're fine. But they need players in there whereby their youngsters are going to turn around and look at them and go, well, you're much bigger than us. Anyway, we've wrapped that up. I don't think we need to talk about Spurs' Burnley game because we spoke about them a lot in the first segment. By the way, if you've got a chance to turn it on, the gone to penalties, yes. Sheffield United and Nottingham Forest has gone to penalties. So here we go. Big penalty shootout.
Come on, Mystic Jason. What are you going for?
Forest.
My heart wants Forest, yeah, massively.
It'll be a final with Sheffield United.
So, go to predictions. Obviously, we haven't got, because I wasn't here, I haven't got last week's. We will summarise last week's predictions and this week on next week's show. But we need to pick the games first. So, I will give you, because he has given a game, I will give you Mr. Cossie's game. And he has gone for Burnley Newcastle. And he has said 2-2.
I'll go 1-1.
I'm going to say 2-1 Newcastle.
On the basis Newcastle won the last home game of the season and they've done everything they need to do now. On the basis that Burnley probably won't beat Villa midweek, I'm going to say 2-1 Burnley, because I think that'll be the game they have to win, and I think that's the one. I don't think they'll beat Villa, but I think they'll beat.
You really want Everton down, don't you?
Oh. Palace in a semi-final, finishing comfortably, playing good football, and Everton Football Club with Frank Lampard relegated. Oh my God.
My game, seeing as I've got it here, Brentford Leeds. I am saying 2-1 Brentford.
I'm going to go 1-0 Leeds.
2-1 Leeds. And I only want that to happen. I hate Leeds, but I only want it to happen at the expense of Everton.
Okay, what games are you choosing?
I'm going to do it for the implication it has on my little bet with you and your Mayo Chickens. Brighton, West Ham.
I hate to say it, but I think West Ham win that game 2-0.
Jason, what's your Brighton, West Ham score?
3-1 West Ham.
Cossie said 1-1. I'm going to say 2-2. Yeah. Cookie, your game?
I don't want to say it, but I'm going to have to because of the theme of what's going on in these predictions. But I'm going to have to pick my game, isn't I? Arsenal Everton.
I mean, you don't. Okay.
What's your score?
Well, 2-0 Arsenal.
Fossey says 3-1 Arsenal. Chase?
I'm going to say 2-1 Arsenal.
I'm going to say 3-2 Arsenal. Right, let me wrap this up then. That is the end of episode 50. The next show is the last one of the Premier League season, and then it's a bit of a free-for-all for what T Football D does leading all the way up to August. So, boys, it's been a pleasure. Cookie, I know not for you so much. But, Jace, I will see you next week. And, Cookie, I will see you for the first show outside of the Premier League season. And no doubt we will have a lot to discuss from there. So, for now, it's see you later, boys.
See
ya. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Total Football Debate podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. It would mean the world to us if you could spread the word regarding our show and leave us a rating so we know how we're doing. Also, please, please, please interact with us on social media, especially on Twitter at TF Debate, where we'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on any of the topics we discuss each week. You never know, we may even get you on the show to say hello. Thanks again for listening and keep an ear out for the next episode.